You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hi folks, be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Dr. History, good morning.
Good morning, Zeb.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I had to fight the wind coming out here, but it's going to blow me all the way back to Burley.
Can you imagine if you're going back to Burley, put a sail up on top of your pickup?
I wouldn't even need to start the engine.
No, I know it. It's blowing out there. It's not a good day for guys like me on crutches that wear hats.
I was going to say, don't wear your hat outside.
I don't chase good.
You wouldn't.
What's going on?
I want to say hi to some people.
Okay.
Kevin, back in Boone, North Carolina.
Oh, that is a lovely part.
Yeah, okay. So he's a professor at Appalachian State University.
Okay.
And he told me about him and his dad used to come out west, visit all these places out here in Idaho, Montana, Wyoming. And his dad passed away a while ago, but he loves our show because we talk about some of the places that he's been to.
Really?
So thanks for writing that, Kevin. I appreciate that.
That's nice.
Christopher, who actually has helped me with a little donation towards writing my book, I appreciate that. And John, down in Texas, is a seventh grade history teacher. And he has suggested a story about a tribe of Indians that I have never heard of before. And it's he actually helped me with the pronunciation.
Oh, here we go. This ought to be good.
So I've got it down. It's the Cowtecan Indians. Cowtecan. Cowtecan.
I've never heard of that.
I haven't either. But they were down there in Texas, and so I may see if I can do a story about them. And
all right.
So thanks, John, for that suggestion.
There's a lot of people that are tuning in listening.
We are. We've got over 400 stories out there, and we're up to about 90,000 downloads this year. So today we're going to go back to 1880 in Glacier Bay, Alaska. So we're going to go north to Alaska.
We're going
to
get cold again.
We're going to get cold. So picture this. There's a big old canoe that's bobbing in the water in a place called Wrangell Harbor.
Okay.
And it's loaded with camping supplies. It's early August in 1880. And John Muir, you've heard of John Muir?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why have I heard about him?
He's helped with like national parks and conservation, things like that.
Oh, okay.
A naturalist. Okay. So he's ready to start on a trip. And along with him is a guy named Reverend Samuel Hall Young. And as he's coming down the dock towards the canoe, he has a dog with him. Now, Muir is not real happy with having a dog that he doesn't think is even going to be able to survive the trip, but the dog jumps in the canoe, and so they're ready to go.
Was it his dog?
No, it was the Reverend's dog.
Oh.
So, but the
thou
dog
shalt did not curse the Reverend's dog.
No, no. So this cedar canoe was piloted by a Wrangell guide by the name of Lot Tyeen, who had brought with him his son-in-law, Joe, who was an excellent hunter and cook. And 17-year-old Billy, a local boy, was coming because he spoke both English and Tlingit, which is
one of the Indian tribes up there. Yeah.
Right. So the Tlingit language. So the five men were ready to set out.
They lived next to the Klangs.
No, they did not. So 1880, naturalist John Muir was not the first tourist to come to the Alaska Panhandle, but he may have been the most famous early one. His writings had appeared in American magazines. He was known across the United States. On his first Alaskan trip the summer before, he had met this Reverend Young, and they became good friends. Well, the missionary admired Muir's enthusiasm and his stamina and asked him to stay on in Wrangell as his house guest. Well, Muir, in turn, talked his new friend into sharing this paddle trip that fall. So the two and their guides and the dog reached Glacier Bay before needing to return to Wrangell so Muir could make the last steamer home. So they were on a kind of a schedule. They had to get up there, make this trip, and then get back in
time.
And
this is in a canoe.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So Muir hadn't nearly enough time there, and he was wanting to explore this Glacier Bay and take notes. So this 1880 journey was kind of a tourist trip in a way, but with a serious mission, okay? And you'll see what I'm talking about, I think. For a map, Muir had a copy of one that had been made 70 years earlier. The coastline was drawn very, very poorly. It had a few bays and glaciers marked, and as they traveled, Muir corrected the lines of the map and gave names to a lot of the landmarks. So you can imagine 70 years later to do an accurate map of that part of Alaska.
Wow.
So,
and there was really nobody around to call for help or anything.
No, they were just in this canoe, the five of them and the dog. So Wrangell lies halfway down the Alaska Panhandle, and Glacier Bay is more than 200 miles to its north.
Oh, my goodness.
So the group paddled the dugout canoe north through a bunch of islands. Muir was in a hurry to see these glaciers. He had some theories about glaciers, and he wanted to see these, lots and lots of glaciers. And he pushed them in to paddle for long days. Along the way, they explored narrow glacier-carved bays called fjords, which, you know, I thought those were just like in Norway and
yeah.
places like that.
Now, there's five people
right,
and a dog
with all their gear.
In a canoe.
Yeah.
That must have been a pretty good-sized canoe.
It must have been a good, yeah. So Lott, who was the guide, tied tree branches to the outer edge of his canoe to protect it from floating ice. So they're traveling through an ice, you know, a bunch of ice flows in the water there. And the men used long sticks to push away icebergs. Now, this doesn't sound like a fun trip to
you
me.
You know, I'm starting to be glad I'm here.
Yes. Yeah. But chunks of this dense blue ice that crashed down from the steep ice walls, they would send big waves across the bay.
Oh, my.
And have you ever been up there, Zev?
I don't want to go up there.
Okay.
I like cold.
I've been up there on a cruise ship.
And I know you have.
And I saw these great big chunks of ice come crashing down from the glacier.
Yeah.
And it, you have these great big waves that come out from that.
I saw it on one of those like National Geographic
yeah.
films, and I mean it's like a tidal wave.
Yeah, but these guys they were kind of the native men were uncomfortable,
and they're in a canoe
because they were so dangerously close to the ice. Well, if they fell in, you know, they would quickly die because you wouldn't survive. But nonetheless, Muir had plotted a course and he planned to stick to it. Well, when the party finally stopped at camp each night, Muir would go out exploring, and this dog would follow him. And in 3 weeks, the canoe reached this Glacier Bay, which I said was 200 miles by canoe.
That's a long
yeah.
paddle.
So this group explored 60 miles deep into this iceberg-filled bay.
Oh, my.
They stopped for a full week at this grand, now called Muir Glacier,
mm-hmm.
and Muir had seen and named this glacier on his 1879 trip, and he was just amazed at this glacier. And again, like I say, he had ideas about glaciers that he wanted to prove. So after leaving Glacier Bay, they paddled west, coming to a smaller bay that was not on the map and now known as Taylor Bay. The sky was thick with fog. The rain drizzled on the men, soaking them to the skin.
Ugh.
It took all of their strength to paddle the shore through the iceberg.
What time of year was this?
This was about August.
And it's that cold?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
It's still awfully cold. So on shore, they set up camp by a glacier. Muir was fascinated with this particular glacier because it appeared to him that the glacier was growing while others were getting smaller. So he couldn't figure this out, so he wanted to go.
He noticed while he was there that it was growing?
Yeah, somehow he was able to see the way the rocks were, and somehow he figured out that some were getting bigger and some were getting smaller.
I would have been scared.
Yeah, and so anyway, he decided he would spend the next day exploring the glacier, which he called Taylor Glacier.
So they're just on a piece of ice?
No, they're at shore. They're on shore now.
Ah.
Next to this glacier.
I see.
They've set up camp, and that's where they're at, on
okay.
shore.
All right.
So he got up early, and he took no time for breakfast. A storm was brewing, and he was kind of in a hurry.
Oh, boy.
Okay. He came from Scotland. Okay, Scotland's kind of a cold, rainy area,
yeah,
too.
Especially if you're wearing a kilt.
That would probably be true. But he was particularly eager to experience this glacier in a snowstorm. Now, that to me...
This guy hasn't got all of his marbles on the table, does he?
He wanted to witness it in a snowstorm.
I see.
Okay, he dropped a biscuit in his pocket and picked up the ice axe. The dog insisted on joining him. And pretty soon, they took off, and they were climbing up on the ice.
Oh, my.
Of this big, huge glacier. And he estimated it to be about 8 miles wide at the water's edge. So picture the ocean, the water, and this glacier stretching for 8 miles across.
I can't envision that.
Yeah. So He took out his notebook and actually...
That sneeze is what this guy got from being in the cold.
Yes. He took out his notebook and he drew the best he could, the glacier. And he describes it was like a river of ice flowing down the mountainside. And as you look at pictures of glaciers, they do look like they're flowing down, right?
Yeah.
So it was uprooting trees on either side and rocks, even great big boulders on each side of the glacier. So he knew it was moving, but it was carving the valley just as it had carved the bay for centuries or years, many, many, many years. Well, he used his axe to cut steps into the steep rises on the glacier so that the little dog could follow him. Well, together they hiked along the east bank of the glacier, and that wasn't too bad. So he crossed the width of the glacier, 8 miles, crossed it.
All by himself?
With a dog,
yeah. The guy is crazy.
Yeah. Well, the glacier center was flowing faster than the sides, and it was buckling into these big crevasses. Okay? He figured some of these, I say crevices, were 1,000 feet deep and 30 feet across.
That's three times the depth of the Snake River Canyon.
Yeah. And so he would jump over these cracks that were only maybe 8 feet wide.
But whoa, now, whoa, whoa, whoa. How do you... Jumped over?
Jumped over these crevices that
Are
were,
you believing all this?
Yeah, I am. 8 feet wide. He must have been a pretty good long jumper.
And stupid.
But he was impressed to see the little dog followed him. It would jump across with him.
Dog wasn't bright either.
And the glacier's west bank, on the glacier's west bank.
He would, these crevasses, he would jump over there 8 feet wide. And how deep?
Well, deep enough you wouldn't come back out. 1,000 feet, you know. So finally he came to a lake that was filled with bobbing icebergs. And he said it was beautiful.
In the glacier?
Yeah, up on top of the glacier there was a lake. But he said it was getting late, so it was time to leave. Late in the day.
Yeah.
Remember, this is just a day hike.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, he headed down, taking what he thought was the shortest route. By this time, the snow was blowing harder, and he wandered blindly into a maze of cracks. Muir was getting a bit nervous and wasn't entirely sure how he would get back. Now, he had kept his eyes trained down so he wouldn't fall into a crevice, which concerned him since he couldn't plan a route carefully if he was always watching his feet. He's always looking down. Okay. Nonetheless, he kept going in what he thought was the right direction, again, jumping over these crevasses. When he came to them, the dog kept up with him and jumped across. Eventually, however, the crevices got wider until they could not be jumped.
Okay. Now what do we
do? Now we're in trouble.
Yeah.
Muir kept hoping each large crevice would be the last. The snow was thick, night was coming, and Muir began to suspect that he would have to spend the night on the glacier.
With nothing more than...
A day pack? I don't know what kind of gear he had with him. You know,
one wouldn't want to start a fire on an ice glacier.
Well,
would
probably not.
Okay.
It wouldn't be a lot of wood to gather. So the man and dog came to one crevice that was much longer and wider than the others. Unable to bear the idea of trying to walk around it, Muir found a place where he dared to jump. Luckily, he reached the other side without sliding back into the bottom.
Oh.
Well, the dog managed to jump across too. But the very next step posed a big problem. Muir was standing on an ice island.
What does that mean?
Well, so you got this big crevice.
Yeah.
And he jumps across, but now it's farther to the other side. So it's like a little island out in the middle of this deep crevice.
This sounds like a Saturday morning cereal.
Yeah. So the only way off was an ice bridge that bridged between this island thing and over to the next side. Okay, but that would require Muir to climb down several feet down to the wall of this island.
Into the crevasse.
Yeah, down a little ways, leaving him suspended in air hundreds of feet above a certain icy death if he fell.
What about the dog?
Well, I'll get to that.
Oh, hurry up.
Okay, so cutting steps with his axe, he carefully crawled down the ice bridge. As he slid along the bridge on his stomach...
Are you kidding?
He flattened it with the axe, because it must have been rounded, so he flattened it so he could hang on. Once on the other side, Muir called for the dog, but the dog refused to follow.
Good dog.
After much begging from Muir, the dog stepped slowly down the ice steps to the ice bridge.
The dog went down the steps?
Any slip would have sent him tumbling to his death. The dog finally made it to Muir. Made it across.
You've got to be kidding me.
Well, the rest of the journey down the glacier was pretty easy.
And he got out of there.
Yeah. But it was late when Muir and the dog returned to camp. They'd been gone 17 hours.
Wow.
They were miserable, cold, and hungry. Now, the Reverend Young, who was his partner on this, you know.
Wasn't he the owner of the dog?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
So, but he had a story to tell. He said the camp had guests while they were gone.
Oh, boy.
A Huna Tlingit chief and the man's three wives. The visitors gave Young gifts of porpoise meat, salmon, clams, crabs, and strawberries. And Young was amazed to see strawberries growing this far north. But then the visitor asked a favor. He said, could Reverend Young pray to his God to stop the glacier from advancing? Because he said it was blocking off a valuable salmon stream, and in a few years it would totally cover the stream, which was a source, the salmon, of course, a source of food for the Tlingit Eskimos. Well, hoping to please the glacier spirit, the chief had already killed two of his slaves as a sacrifice to the gods. The missionary saw this as this story as proof that these people really needed Christianity, but evidently he prayed to satisfy the chief that he would try to stop the advance of the glacier. Well, and then Muir realized, too, that this was proof that the glacier was growing because of the Tlingit chief, what he said. Anyway, from Taylor Bay, the group quickly paddled south. Muir was in a hurry to catch that southbound ship in September, the mail ship. And his canoe trip had lasted only about 6 weeks. And so picture that. He must have traveled like 500 miles in this canoe.
Holy cow.
But he needed to return home to California. And Muir shared his map with the U.S. government since it was much better than any other map available at the time. So if you think about it, this was 1888, so the Klondike Gold Rush was another 10 years down the road. So he kind of, in a way, maybe paved the way for the Klondike Gold Rush. But he also helped establish, when he got home, he established some national parks. Well, at one time, President Theodore Roosevelt invited him on a camping trip in Yosemite. And they spent 3 days exploring the waterfalls and things like this. But this inspired by this trip with Muir, Roosevelt set aside more than 230 million acres of public land, which is larger than the state of Texas, and it included five national parks and 18 national monuments. But because of Muir, he helped create several national parks, including Sequoia in 1890, Mount Rainier in 1899, and the Grand Canyon in 1908.
Holy smokes.
So he was quite a naturalist, explorer, but that trip to Alaska, wow.
This is amazing. This is one of the best stories you've ever had.
Well, Alaska, like I said,
but to do this on your own,
yeah,
and knowing that a false step on the ice,
right,
and you're going to go 1,000 feet into a crevasse.
Exactly.
Oh my, no!
Now, like I said, I've been to Alaska, Skagway, where the Klondike miners started out from.
Yeah,
but we took a helicopter trip up on top of a glacier and landed on this glacier. And
I'm starting to wonder about how smart you are.
It was amazing, Zeb. And as we were walking around on this glacier, which where we were, it was flat. Okay, it was safe.
Did you see any crevices or crevasses?
No. But there was a stream of water about 2 feet wide coming out. And I asked the guide, our pilot, I said, is that water good to drink? He said, that's the purest, cleanest water you will ever drink. So we all had to get down and get handfuls of water. And you know how sometimes water tastes good?
Yeah.
You know how just that cold.
Yeah.
Oh, and it was. It just was.
Did you have your dog with you?
I did not take a dog.
Okay.
No. But it was an amazing.
That is a scary story.
It is.
Really?
Well, you think about Shackleton down at the South Pole.
Yeah.
You know, and his trip going across crevices and what he did.
Holy moly.
Anyway,
one of your best.
I have no desire to be in the cold.
No, I wouldn't go on a glacier for anything.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.